Great to have you with us on WPR. Larry Mueller here, and we've got, I think, a great show for you today. We're going to take a look at the year for you, and we're going to talk about improving your health in the new year, one with optimism, one with informed alcohol use, and another with synced circadian rhythms. And we're going to start today by focusing on how you can stay optimistic during the winter months with our guest, Dr. Shyla Merghain. She's a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. She specializes in using mind-body medicine to treat mood and anxiety disorders. She looks at injury, rehabilitation, and more with athletes. Dr. Merghain is also a sports psychologist to UW Badger student athletes. And as always, she has some great advice for us for staying positive during these darker winter months. And I want you to join in as we move along today. Let us know how you find hope when the weather's cold and the days are short. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Dr. Shyla Merghain, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
So great to be here. Thanks for having me, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. What are some of the common mental health challenges people face during the winter months?
Well, so many people can have the winter blues, and a subset of those folks can fall into seasonal affective disorder. I also think there's a lot of uncertainty in our country. Just hearing that news update, that can cause some anxiety and distress. And I think it's very easy to fall into a rut, to feel lower motivation, to give up on those New Year's resolutions. And choosing to stay optimistic is really a skill needed to help us cope with stress in our lives and stay resilient during these uncertain times.
Yeah. And I was thinking about the holidays. The holidays can affect our mental health both positively, but also negatively as well.
Absolutely. A lot of people might be facing financial stress from overspending or just feeling a little unsettled after a recent conflict with family members. Or I know, like myself, it's just fatigue of having had a very hectic holiday time and then feeling like, oh, you know, you're needing some extra rest. And so I think all of that can feel like a pressure cooker. And as a result, I think people can experience lower mood and maybe also get into a place of pessimism. And we know there are health consequences if we get into that pessimistic stance.
From a psychology standpoint, what's the difference between optimists and pessimists?
This is such a great question, Larry. Optimists really externalize adversity, those challenges. They see them as fleeting, things that can be remedied, and they're specific. And setbacks are just simply mistakes that people can learn from. We also find, as a result of that mindset, optimists handle stress better, and they're much quicker to get over setbacks. And I love this differentiation, too, that optimists tend to credit good events to personal, permanent, pervasive causes versus those pessimists can think that, oh, you know, if I have this bad thing happen, it's going to plague me forever and it's because of something I did. And they're not necessarily, as a result, that can be a predictor of depression because pessimists feel less control. While optimists tend to exaggerate the control they have over events.
I was thinking about my own situation. You know, a couple of years back, it started with some health issues with my siblings, and I was asked to take a much larger and, quite honestly, unexpected role in their care. And so I was feeling, I don't know, sorry for myself or whatever. And then I realized, wait a minute, you're the healthy one. You're the one who has the ability to help. And that once I came to that, I felt a lot better. And I think I performed a bit better, too.
I love that. And I think optimism and hope go hand in hand. And I think that's a wonderful example of showing when we can get into that optimist can-do mindset, we might be better at assessing the situation. We'll have more clarity of thought to problem solve what we can do. And it really gets us back in the driver's seat.
Yeah. I guess there are some health benefits, as you were kind of talking about, some health benefits of being an optimist versus being a pessimist.
Yeah. I think this is really powerful. Again, it's an effective tool for dealing with stress and anxiety. But more specifically, research has found that optimists catch fewer infectious diseases than pessimists do. They also have better health habits. And we know our immune system may work better when we're optimistic because we are experiencing less stress and less sympathetic activation in the body. And there's some evidence that suggests that optimists live longer than pessimists. So again, we think about it as optimism as a skill we can all practice.
You know, and just saying, well, think positive thoughts, you know, and that's a lot easier said than it is done. How do you shift your thinking to avoid negative self-talk?
Great. This really gets at the heart of it. And I think it's important to note we don't have to be overly positive, Pollyanna-ish, because there can be some negative to that because it can be realistic. But we're really looking at the wisdom of finding balance and trying not to really catch ourselves, to try to catch ourselves when we're catastrophizing, thinking the worst, when our mind gets hooked in those worst case scenarios. And remember, we always have a choice about how we think about a situation. And that power of choice, I think, is really part of our inner freedom. So if we find ourselves going to worst case scenario, if we find ourselves catastrophizing, you can imagine a stop sign or say the word stop or clap your hands stop to kind of reboot. And think about reframing the situation, thinking about what can I do? What support can I have? What might be a best case scenario instead of worst case scenario? What is a next step that I can take to help me resolve this? And again, we don't know the future. I think a lot of people are feeling doom and gloom about the future. I've seen that, 2025, it hasn't gone well so far. And I think we can't predict the future. So focus again on just one small thing that we can do to improve our lives. And again, it's a choice to have hope for the future. It's a choice to think optimistically about things that will go. I know my mom always has a wonderful saying, in the end, it'll be okay. And if it's not okay, it's simply not the end. And I know I will repeat that one to keep that optimism alive in my own life when I'm in challenging times.
Dr. Shyla Morgain, our guest, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison's School of Medicine and Public Health. You want to chime in? The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you with us here on WPR News, taking a look at improving your health in the new year with optimism. And our guest, Dr. Shyla Morgain, it's great to have her back from the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And experience to share a question, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. Dennis emailed, and I think he's talking about what you were just visiting with us about. His comment, should people incrementally focus on one rung above their current frustration and depression? Incremental improvement might indicate more increments are possible and worth the effort.
Absolutely. You don't want to feel overwhelmed by working on this, but instead, I think even a simple question when we're working with our thinking is, we identify maybe that negative thought and thinking, is this thought bringing me peace of mind? Is this thought helping? Is this thought making me more hopeful? If not, we could chuck that thought out and then think about what thought would make me feel better in this moment, what thought would feel more helpful, what thought is more realistic, what thought is maybe focusing on the silver lining or what could go right in this situation.
Yeah. And you, in passing, you mentioned decatastrophizing. That's a term. Is that what you just described for us, or what does that term mean?
Absolutely. Research shows that when people are catastrophizing, doom and gloom, worst-case scenarios, they don't do as well. For example, people with chronic pain who are tracked over time that catastrophize, over time they have more pain, lower functioning, and greater suffering. And I think when we're catastrophizing, it is a lot of unnecessary suffering in our lives. It's not helpful. So to decatastrophize, it's like these thoughts have us on a hook, and we're flailing around like a fish on a hook, but we forget that the hook is barbless. So you can even label it, oh, there's a catastrophizing thought. We could think again, what is a more realistic thought? What is a more helpful thought? What thought would bring me peace? Or even, what would I say to a friend going through this? And my sense is that might help you come up with a more helpful, balanced thought, encouraging thought, to think about, yeah, how you can carry on and really give you that sense of hope that you need.
Vivian in Green Bay has something for us, so let's go there. Vivian, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm a pretty resilient, level-headed person, but last Friday I got some financial news that sort of put me in a fight-or-flight anxiety state, you know, where if I had alcohol or if I'd been able to just go to bed and cry. But I know I have to distract myself. The optimism part is hard to bring out sometimes. But so occupational therapy, find something to do, even something very rote, and let your mind drift a little. Sometimes just doing that, solutions will present themselves. You know, you don't have to solve the problem immediately.
Yeah. Vivian, thanks for calling. What about Vivian's comments, Shyla?
Yeah, Vivian, and I'm so sorry to hear about that financial news, and you're certainly not alone in some of those financial struggles, but wonderful to hear about your resilience and the strategies you're using to keep optimism and hope alive. And you're speaking about behaviors and engaging in distraction. I always am encouraging people to try to do one thing that will spark joy, one pleasant activity that will bring a smile to your face, that will bring a pleasurable experience, and it can be free. It can just be outside looking at nature or calling a friend or even treating yourself to something. And I think when we can do that, it puts us back in control, that challenge, especially with a long-term challenge. Larry, you're talking about health issues and families. Like, that doesn't get fixed overnight. Financial struggles, sometimes that can take a long time to fix, but it can. But in the process, making sure you're infusing yourself with things that really light up your spirit. And sometimes that's the first thing to go, but the most important thing to include.
Yeah. You use something called the SOAR practice to deal with uncertainty in life. Tell us more about that practice.
Yeah, I think the SOAR practice is a powerful one. It's a mindfulness practice we can use to get into the moment, to connect back with ourselves, and to allow more of life to come in. When we're in that place of pessimism or doom and gloom, catastrophizing, we get tunnel vision, focusing on what's wrong, and our mind can get stuck there. The SOAR practice is an acronym. S stands for, and people could even do this while I'm talking, so you might think of a recent small challenge, and then let's SOAR. So S stands for stop, pause, and connect with your breath. And you might just take one deep cleansing breath, so the stop for SOAR. The second is open. Open up and soften in the body. Often when we're going through challenging times, we tend to clench, clenching the body, clenching the jaw, clenching the teeth. And just see if you can relax the body, relax the jaw, the tongue, and even the back of the tongue can help ground us back in the inner body. The A stands for awareness of the moment without judgment or identification. So just aware of the moment as it is, trying to get out of judgmental mind. And after we stopped, opened up and softened the body, awareness of the moment, then the last is R, respond from this deeper, grounded place. And I think that practice, soar, stop, open, awareness, and respond, can allow us to get out of our head into the body, back in touch with our own innate capacities, and have a much more effective response versus just reactivity.
You know what? I tried that. Well, you were describing it. It does feel good to stop and pause and take a deep breath and soften up your body, become aware of the moment, which at the moment I'm on a radio show, so I better keep going. and respond. So that's a great way to look at it. And I'm wondering about is this what you use in the winter, the strategy?
Definitely. You know, I think it's good to have different mindfulness practices that can tap us into the here and now instead of that doom and gloom negative thinking. There are kind of many blessings around us that we take for granted. And I think when we're thinking about cultivating optimism, it's so important to, when we're going through challenging times or winter weather in Wisconsin, to get in touch with a larger sense of meaning of what's important to us, our own values, who we strive to be in the world. And when we think about kind of what is helping us get through, who we are becoming in the process, and even our ripple effect, what we are, that legacy, what we're going to leave behind, then all of a sudden, I think it helps us maybe see a larger perspective to a challenge we're going through. And it allows us to think about, there's a lot I can change. There's a lot I can contribute. There is meaning in this. And that, I think, can be really powerful to keep our focus on staying positive in the times to come.
Yeah. Well, it's plenty cold outside this morning at about 20 to 6. I went out for my morning couple mile, 3 miles sometimes, but not this morning. Sort of jog walk around the neighborhood, and it's cold, but it's hard to get up and get out there sometimes during the winter, but I find it useful to get outside and do some exercise.
Yeah, I don't blame you. This morning, driving to work, it was 1 degree, and it was pretty cool to be out there. But I think you're bringing up a great point, Larry, and thank you for mentioning this, that, you know, moving your body, right? If you're feeling stuck, if you're feeling down, we know movement, especially walking, can be a great natural antidepressant. And when people are stuck, getting some sort of physical activity can help feel that sense of flow again and can bring new ideas and new perspectives. And in the winter, we do become a lot very sedentary. Earlier today, I gave somebody the encouragement to just go to the grocery store and walk a few extra laps while you're grocery shopping to get a little movement in if you don't feel like you want to get out on these cold, snowy, slippery days. But even just walking around your house or going up and down some stairs can really do wonders, I think. And we know exercise, again, great mood booster, but also can help us stay resilient in the times of stress.
Yeah. I think in this time of the year, too, when it's cold and we're in our homes, relationships can become, well, either strained for those you're in the home with, or if you're by yourself, kind of getting away from those relationships because it's maybe too cold to go out and see somebody. How important are these relationships with others during these winter months?
Great. I think it's twofold. We can have cabin fever and start to get irritable with our loved ones if we're at home all together and not getting out. But I also find that for many people, they feel an increase in loneliness and isolation because they're not getting out and seeing people, or people aren't meeting up for plans. So I think social support is very protective of against depression. It's really important to have people in our lives that support you, that you can talk with in a vulnerable way about what what those challenges are, can give you some different perspectives on how to handle things, some new ideas, or just be a cheerleader to encourage you to keep going. And, you know, this time of year, maybe it's good to try to get out with the loved ones or take a little break if you find you're kind of feeling too cooped up. I always say good fences make good relationships, so we need a little bit of spaciousness in there. But if you do feel like you're isolated, make an effort to reach out to somebody, even if it's just a call, to stay connected.
How can you tell if you just have the winter blues or cabin fever, or if you might need care for clinical depression?
Yeah, that's a great question. That if you find that your mood is so down that it's down most of the day, nearly every day for at least 2 weeks, or you are experiencing loss of interest or pleasure in things that you typically enjoy for most of the day, nearly every day for at least 2 weeks. And if you're noticing your mood is impacting your relationships or just functioning, like at work or at school, all of those are indicators that you might be in a clinical depression. And then don't hesitate to reach out to your doctor. You could see a behavioral health specialist. Medication can be helpful for certainly more severe depression. And I think a real key is early intervention is so important at helping depression remit.
Just remembering, we did a show on seasonal affective disorder on November 18th. If someone wants more information on that, go to talk@WPR.org or WPR.org/Larry. And the November 18th date, we talked about seasonal affective disorder. So a little more information on that. Shyla, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking some time to be with us today. I appreciate it and look forward to another visit.
Oh, thank you so much. Happy New Year. Appreciate being here.
Happy New Year to you. Dr. Shyla Mergane, our guest today. Great to have her with us. She is a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And just a note, and I'm just looking around here in my papers for something, if you or someone you know is struggling with mental health, don't forget that hotline. It's 988. That's the number, 988. That is our suicide and crisis lifeline, we call it. Don't hesitate to use it, 988. Coming up, we're going to talk about how drinking alcohol affects your body in dry January. And at noon, we'll talk about living in sync with your circadian rhythm. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.